There seems to be a heck of a lot going on in KwaZulu-Natal right now. We have the, well, furore over the Comrades Marathon. We have Chris Pappas fighting with the Pietermaritzburg municipality. His municipality is Mngeni. And once upon a time, the biggest industrial company in the province, Tongaat Hulett, is back in the news. The big fight going on there as well. Now, our man on the Tongaat Hulett story for some years now has been Dave Willem. Dave, good to be talking with you. Just so I can introduce you, you live in KZN. You have been a shareholder activist on Tongaat Hulett. You went to the board of Tongaat Hulett and told them long before the trouble started what they needed to look out for. They rejected you. They kicked you out. You are a chartered accountant. You used to be the financial director of a major bank. So you kind of know your way around the numbers. We've been bombarded from both sides now on people who want to buy Tongaat Hulett. Some apparently trying to get it on the cheap. Others claiming that the shareholders are stupid because they're going to lose everything. If we can just start at a basic position of somebody who knows nothing about Tongaat Hulett, in many ways it's a bit like what happened with Steinhoff, where here you had a company that was once allegedly an incredible operation, but actually there was all kinds of funny stuff that happened inside. Just in a nutshell, tell us what went on.
Morning, Alec, and thanks for having me on. I think I'll try not to take too much time on the intro, but one has to go back, you know, probably even 7 or 8 years, when the company had diversified into property. That property for a while was really, really successful. The whole of the Durban North area from Mhlanga Ridge all the way out to the airport became very, very fertile ground for Tongaat. But that started to slow up, and the kind of, I guess, golden egg that was laying the goose, sorry, the goose that was laying the golden egg, stopped laying. And the company that had been reporting very, very good earnings suddenly found itself short. And so they made up numbers in simple terms. This wasn't a complex fraud. There was actually no real fraud of like expropriation of money or extracting money. It was falsifying numbers, making the numbers look better than they were. In that process, they also accumulated a lot of debt. So it's usually a red flag to anyone when profits are high and the company is raising a lot of debt. Well, if your profits are so high, why do you have to raise debt? That was the starting point. Since then, obviously, things unfolded very quickly. The company put a massive investigation, and they determined that multiple billions of assets that were being carried weren't really assets. They were either deferred expenditure or they were property deals that were fictitiously created. The board decided at a point that they needed to go into business rescue. The banks had drawn a line in the sand. And I have some sympathy for the banks in a way. I have less sympathy now, but at that stage, I think they'd been dragged along and dragged along for a long, long time. They'd been told one after another false promise. And they drew a line and said no. The BRPs came in October 22. They took some time to get the handle on things. We were concerned right from the beginning that the agenda that was set by the BRPs was flawed. They insisted on the group being sold whole. We couldn't really understand that a company with multiple billions of debt would have that as its primary goal. And so what we saw was many, many suitors, but mostly wanting one or two or parts of the business. They eventually settled on a company called Kagera, a Tanzanian company, and they promised the money. They didn't come up with the money. There was we're not sure exactly what happened, but they presented a guarantee by the IDC, and the IDC failed to deliver on it. It was withdrawn. The person was suspended. So we were back to square one. And since then, we've just had quite frankly, a mess. We've had bidders coming in, bidders going out. We've had no transparency at all. We asked the BRPs to give us information. We have not had any financials since March 22. And even those financials were a kind of summary of the financials. They weren't proper financials. So the last audited annual report published by Tongaat was March 21. Now, we believe that's a fundamental transgression of the listing requirements because they're a listed company. They might be suspended, but they're still listed. In fact, they're a company. They also have to comply with the Companies Act. We've been told, no, the auditors won't sign off the financials. And we understand that because they're not a going concern. But you can qualify. That's why we have qualified audit opinions, why we have emphasis of matter. So we find that reason absolutely bizarre. But what we got to, to fast forward now, we got to December. There were two players, RGS, a Mozambican outfit, Vision, a consortium of South African, Pakistani, Zimbabwean. So two South African players and a Pakistani and a sugar operation and a Zimbabwean business. And they emerged as the preferred bidders in the BRP process. There was a lot of controversy, a lot of court interdicts, a lot of court cases that ran around December. The sugar industry launched an interdict because they were owed money. There have been interdicts raised, launched by creditors. There were interdicts raised by just about everybody. But at the end of the day, the BRP was approved on the 11th of January after three adjourned meetings and multiple amendments, last-minute amendments, little words changed. But when you look at those words, they turned out to be very, very important. For example, the biggest issue we face right now, Vision has supposedly acquired all the lender claims, i.e. they've acquired from the lender group, the 11 financial institutions, all the loan claims on Tongaat and all the security, which makes them by far, in a way, the largest creditor and a secured creditor for that matter. It turns out, however, they haven't paid for those loans. So that for us was a big issue because we said, well, hold on, you can't buy the loan claims on a company on credit. That's bizarre. Never mind the business rescue practitioners accepting that on that basis, because what happens when you don't pay? What happens if you don't come up with the money? Are the banks going to take back those loan claims? Are they going to take back the security?
Tongaat Hulett has lots of ground and lots of ground to the north of Durban and Mkhalanga. It did great developments. At some point in time, those old sugarcane fields, which it still owns, have got to be worth something. They've also got a good operation in Zimbabwe, which at some point in time has got to be worth something. Similarly, in other parts of the region. Why is it that shareholders are getting nothing? Is this because the banks are owed so much money that it doesn't matter what those assets are worth, they're actually never going to be able to repay the debt?
It's a very good question. Well, the total debts as compiled by the claims on the company, secured and unsecured, compiled by the business rescue practitioners, are about 12 billion rand. So I guess common sense would tell you, if the assets, the sum of the value of the assets or sum of the parts or the value of the whole is more than 12 billion, then shareholders have something. If it's less than 12 billion, they probably don't have a lot. I would guess that there was a time when these assets were worth way more than that. In fact, we were told in 2021 and 2020 that the land itself was worth 11.5 billion rand by the auditors, with a certificate of valuation produced by a major property, independent property valuer. So, but they've told us since then, well, the land might be worth that if you wait 100 years, but it's not worth that if you fire selling assets for liquidation. So that is real. That's an accepted concept. Similarly, Mozambique is a fantastic operation. We know we have bids on the table for approximately $200 million for Mozambique. That translates to about 3.6, 3.7 billion. We know that Zimbabwe is one of the best sugar states in the world. It is in dire straits right now because of local geopolitical issues political issues and lack of care by the Tongaat management, but it's one of the greatest sugar states in the world. It produces 500,000 tons of sugar at some of the highest yields in the world. So that is a very highly valued business if Zimbabwe can stabilize. South Africa is a diminishing sugar producer. in that the land is not irrigated and relies on rainfall. But nonetheless, it produces 500,000 tons of sugar as well, South Africa, and can produce up to 600,000 tons. So when I add all this together and I say it's roughly 1.4 million tons of sugar should produce EBIT of around 1.2 to 1.4 million billion rand. That is a business that if you put even a conservative multiple on is not worth nothing. But what's happened is the debt has accumulated interest for 5 years. And I don't know whether they were trying to scare shareholders in the circular, but they put a table that showed if we delay the conversion of debt to equity month by month, what the debt would grow to. Well, a simple mathematical calculation will tell you what the implied interest rate is. Just simple math. Works out at 19.6%. So those are the interest rates that are now being charged on these loans because they are in default. Now, I don't think there's a fintech or a startup, tech company in the world that can pay 19.6% interest rates and survive. It just doesn't work. That makes your WACC absolutely enormous. So they're stuck between a rock and a hard place. I estimate that of the 8.5 billion owed to the banks, around 4 billion of it is just interest accumulated in the last 3.5 years. So, the problem just never goes away.
So until you grasp the nettle or until someone takes a haircut somewhere. What is likely to happen from here, Dave? You know the inside story. You know the people who are involved here. Are the Mozambicans going to be able to come up with a deal? Will the banks see that there needs to be some kind of a conclusion here? Or indeed, will Gumede and Vision be successful?
So, Alec, I think our greatest concern, and when I use the word our, there's a group of shareholders that have around 18 to 20% of the shares that have kind of collaborated. We've stayed very involved just because we really have a passion for Tonga, the business, and its people. And I can't emphasize that enough. It's not about the money. We have said all along, if a solution can be put on the table that is great for the company, we don't mind. In fact, we accept that we can't have our cake and eat it. If shareholders could come up with the money, well, that would have been done a long time ago. They didn't show any interest. Most of the institutional shareholders sold and went away. So we have three big shareholders at the moment. The PIC, Artemis, which is one of our group of shareholders. It's a property company from KZN. And the Rutlands that still have something in the order of 15%. For the rest of it, we just want a solution that is going to help these companies keep the North Coast economy alive first and foremost. And obviously Zimbabwe and Mozambique, where they're also very significant. Hundreds of thousands of livelihoods or people depend on the livelihoods of these businesses. We are puzzled that the choice of Vision, which is, we believe they're paying 3.6 billion rand for the 8.5 billion in claims. So they're getting about a 60% haircut. That they haven't been able to pay for that portion of the acquisition. They still have to pay creditors in terms of the BRP plan. They still have to pay the Sugar Association. And most importantly, they've got to put money in the company. This company needs about a billion rand capital injection. All the circular and the voting and everything that took place in the last little while was about pieces of paper being swapped around, scratching out the lender group and putting in Vision, issuing 4.9 billion shares and scratching out some of the loan claims, 5 billion of them. But that doesn't change the economics of the company 1 cent. And we are just concerned that we're jumping out of the frying pan into the fire with a weak shareholder who doesn't have and is opportunistically doing this deal, but doesn't have the strength, financial strength, to see it through, which means it's most likely then we'll start seeing assets being sold, breakup of the company, radical cost cutting. And we think after 5 years, if this is all we can come up with, it's a tragedy.
What's happened to the employees? What's happened to those people who at one stage there were many thousands employed or who relied on Tonga and Hewlett for their livelihoods? What's happening there? And is this what's concerning you, that they could finally have the rug completely taken away from them?
At a liquidation, which the BRP's envision are sort of threatening as the outcome, you know, from they were very, very angry with shareholders voting no last week. And I think they didn't really pause to talk to us or even engage with us at all to understand why did we do what we did. We did it because we were concerned that if they got 97% of the company and they hadn't put money in, all the money for the debt, they had complete control. There was no more real avenues for intervention. But the company, by and large, remember, Mozambique and Zimbabwe are not under business rescue. They're independent operations in a foreign country. They have been neglected tremendously. There's been no money, no management time. They've been neglected and are suffering from lack of any management oversight. But South Africa has continued to operate. The property business is all but liquidated. It's closed down. That doesn't mean the land, all that land from Umhlanga Ridge all the way up to the airport is covered in sugarcane fields. That is available for development one day, but it's all still in Tongaat Sugar. The Tongaat Sugar business, the employees have largely been kept. The suppliers are being paid right now. The farmers are being paid, but there's about 1 point something billion owed to the creditors, your trade creditors, your engineering firms, transport companies, electricians, builders, and the at about 500 million owed to the sugar industry under the Sugar Act, which is a redistribution payment at the end of each season. So of that, about half of it's owed to the millers, the other millers, RCL and Ilova, and half of it's owed to the farmers. So there's a lot of money, a couple of billion has been lost, but to be honest, I'm very, very grateful that by and large, jobs have been saved, the growers are being paid, creditors are at least being paid now, their pre-business rescue debts have been frozen.
So what's going to happen next?
Well, I've maintained all along that this is a balance sheet debt problem, not a business problem. You know, it's the businesses are actually really good businesses. They were neglected through lack of capex, but we've seen some improvements in the last little while. The sugar business at SA, we understand, generated about 500 million of free cash flow this year, so that's good. We know that because the IDC facility dropped down quite dramatically. Zimbabwe is a great business, but very neglected and very caught up in politics. And Mozambique is a fantastic business. So these businesses and the land business is, I think KZN is stalled for now. But the inevitable pendulum will swing back and there will be a demand for land. So these are great businesses. But when you've got such an overhang of debt, you can never dig yourself out of the hole. So what we need is the company, the businesses, to be freed from the shackles of this debt. The reality for the banks is they're not going to get back any more money. We're puzzled that one bidder has bid for Mozambique, just Mozambique, for roughly what Vision is paying for the whole group. We don't really understand the economic logic of that, why you would be so obsessed to keep it all together when one piece of it. We also understand that a $100 million bid was made for Zimbabwe. So that's $5.4 billion, a hell of a lot more than the $3.6 billion being offered by Vision, or we understand, allegedly, the payment to the banks. And they really are paying a paltry amount of $75 million to the creditors, about 5-6 cents in the rand. So it just seems like a very poor deal, and we don't know why. And I always, in the absence of a logical answer, I have to start asking questions as to, well, surely that if the logical answer is X and you're not doing X, why, and we don't get any answers. It's just lack of transparency completely.
Just trying to put it in terms that everyone would understand. That movie Wall Street, if you recall, with Michael Douglas, a real classic about business, was all about an asset strip. So an opportunist would see that here was a business that had great assets, go in there, buy it for a song, and then break it up and make a fortune. Are there parallels?
Look, I think it would be sensationalist, and I'm really trying to avoid getting into the gutter press. And we've had a lot of gutter press in the last while. There's some absolutely, truly bizarre articles being published. So I'm going to say no to that. I don't think that's the case. I think the banks have got themselves so far down a road that they're finding it very hard to think about a reverse gear or changing tracks. I think Vision came in with a vision, excuse the pun. They thought, I believe, that the PRC would participate. And I believe the PRC is not participating. So I say believe because I don't know, but I'm well informed. And I think what happened is that their funding disappeared. Now they're scrambling to get funding. And this is the case of everybody scrambling and running out of time. We've seen it with Edcon. We've seen it with EOH. And we've seen it with Brait now more recently. And Steinhoff, obviously, similarly. The problem is the debt just keeps building and nobody seems to be able to grab the nettle and do something bold.
And in the meantime, the business rescue practitioners presumably are getting paid. So they have not a great incentive to wrap things up.
They should. And I don't want to get into playing the man. We are disappointed that the lack of transparency by the BRPs and just the strange decisioning has led us here. We offered our help so many times. There are a lot of, as Warren Buffett calls, the helpers. You remember from his letter many years ago. There are a lot of helpers. And the super helpers. And there are a lot of helpers in this. We have had more law firms, advisory firms, than you could fill a page with them all. And no doubt they're being paid. And I guess I have no problem with that, but deliver some success. At the moment, we're seeing no success at all, quite frankly.
So we've got parasitic, if you want to be pretty brutal about it, parasites who are enjoying the fruits, they're getting paid anyway, on the one hand. Then you've got the banks who are fooling themselves by adding capitalizing interest, which they're not ever going to receive. But I guess their disincentive is if they write that off, they're going to take a big hit against their profits, and their shareholders won't be too happy about that. And because everyone is kicking the can down the road, for good reason if you're a professional or a super helper, and for also a good reason if you happen to be a bank, it's just getting into a bigger and bigger problem. So my question really is, what's going to break the logjam? What is going to end all of this?
Well, we have reached out and we will continue to reach out to the banks first and foremost because they hold the key. They hold the primary rights. We understand the banks, in a way, wanted someone else to come in and deal with all the commercial reality that is involved in something like this rather than themselves. They're lenders. They don't really want to be owners. And they don't want to be having to make hard decisions that are politically difficult in three countries that are very, very complex politics right now. So I guess for them, it was very convenient to have somebody who could take that away from them. But we urge the banks to listen to all the stakeholders, to listen to those that have got an interest in trying to save this company and all the people, the history, the long history of the company, and to try and figure out a solution that is going to actually be, there's no win-win. I think the idea of a win-win just doesn't exist anymore, but there's a least bad outcome. And if the least bad outcome protects jobs, sustains the businesses, gives them a space to rebuild themselves, then that's as close to a win as I could hope for, and I'd be excited. I just don't see that happening right now. It's just too many lawyers and court cases happening.
And just to close off with, as far as Steinhoff is concerned, the banks had to take a hit there, and they did. Has any bank written off anything yet on Tongaat?
Well, I think as an ex-CFO of a bank, they would have provided for this heavily already. The IFRS rules say you've got to provide, regardless of what you might get back, you have to provide according to probability-based outcomes. So I suspect if the purchase price is 3.6, they're probably holding it at way less than that because provisions are normally conservative. Obviously, they're really interested in the cash. They want to get some cash out of this and be done with it. And they have all these intensive care units that look after these problem accounts, and they're trying to maximize cash. I think they're heavily provided. They're not going to suffer a loss in accounting terms. They're going to suffer an economic loss when they finally have to give up the ghost. But I think I think that's already happened. I don't think anyone's fooling themselves about that. But what really is, I think, important right now is I think there's some moral hazard risk in this, and I suspect the banks don't want to really be holding that. And I have some sympathy with that. That's not their business.
A Gordian knot indeed. Dave Willem, who is a shareholder activist, and you can follow the contract story very closely.